Well, I'm recording now. Welcome to Drew and his piss wall, according to Chris.
I call it the gulag aesthetic.
And we, t-shirt from yesterday?
Oh yeah, it's clean, of course. They're all clean. They're all new. Yeah, I'll be wearing it. Now that I've revealed them all to everybody, I can start wearing them. I don't know where I'm going to go.
Do you use Arch, by the way?
Yeah, of course I use Arch. Yeah. I thought you knew that. I thought you thought.
I mean, I assume so. But wasn't there a time you used Manjaro?
I tried it for a bit, but nah.
I mean, it would be funnier to wear the t-shirt if you didn't use Arch.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know,
so yeah. I don't even use Linux.
What's Linux?
Yeah, we're talking about. Yeah, it's just a t-shirt, man. I mean, I've used probably. Well, certainly every major distro there was, you know. Some that you've probably not even heard of because they were before any of the, you know, the set before all set.
Did you use Yggdrasil?
I've never used Yggdrasil, no. I have heard of it, though. So.
Yeah. I was Slackware for a while.
Slackware is the first sort of organized one that I used because before Linux came along, you had a kind of
GNU plus.
It was GNU, and it was a sort of cobble things together on the system you had. So I started using GNU in the late 80s, early 90s, when it was still tools that you compiled into your own native system. So that at the time that would
be. Traffic, by the way.
Is that what that is? Is it traffic? I thought it was somebody going by your door.
No, my window, that was a truck or a farm vehicle going past my window open because fucking hot.
It's fucking hot. It's gone, Chris is at the beach, look.
Yeah.
It's gone hot suddenly as well. Like, between one day and the next, the nighttime temperature went from 3 degrees to 17 degrees.
It's ridiculous.
I need time to acclimatise. I'm not fucking built for this shit.
Do you ever have a fan? And do you ever put icy things in front of the fan?
I try and have it as relief for half an hour.
You put them behind
melt,
usually.
And then you've got to get more ice.
Behind's better, I think, because you're...
I sit in front of a fan and spray myself with water.
Yeah, spray. I've not done it for a while because I don't have a spare basin, but I used to sit with my feet in a basin of water with ice in it.
Yeah, that'd be nice as well.
The problem with that is the dogs try and drink the water and eat the ice.
That's easy. Just poison it. Two birds, one stone.
Stops the problem, you're right there.
Two dogs. One dog.
Well,
we've got to work on our counting and animals.
We're doing badly here already. We can't even. I think we're all sort of dazzled by being up in the morning. And
one thing that you might want to be aware of as a learner driver, Hamish, is that when the weather gets ridiculously hot, people's driving descends into absolute insanity.
Oh,
everybody
good.
Becomes Italian.
Yes.
My first practical behind the wheel again thing is 6:30 on tomorrow, Thursday. Mm. So 6:30 in the evening.
Just speaking of things that are happening tomorrow, I'll go on Ozone's podcast.
He wants me on. I don't know why he wants me on, to be honest. But
yeah, he should get. I think he's going to probably ask you as well, Drew.
Yeah, he probably will.
Well, how about I invite you, and you're like, yeah, I'll do it, and then I turn up.
Hello. He wants me, but I've told him that I probably won't do it until I've moved, at least. But I don't know what I'm going to do for him, really. But you know.
I mean, you've got more to say than I do. I'm just a barista now.
A barista.
I don't even know shit about coffee. So.
I thought you were a master baker.
That's what I aspire to be.
I've got a friend who he doesn't do it anymore, but he used to be a baker for years and years. He was like a proper baker and
master baker.
The joke was that he Gonzo was a master baker. You know.
Yeah. Gets up early in the morning for that.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, I'm slowly becoming. I'm trying to force myself into becoming more of a morning person. So that's I've already done shit loads of stuff today.
I think I am a morning person, but it's not really.
But your window of existence shifts around, unfortunately.
No, yeah, but I prefer getting up very early in the morning. That's my preference. Didn't used to be when I was younger, but yeah, I like getting up.
Well, didn't they do studies that when you're a teenager, and particularly when all the hormones are all messing about and everything, that it's actually not, you know, it's not just teenagers not being lazy, it's a sort of physical, physiological thing. Right, we better actually talk about The Expanse because we've got three episodes worth to cram in.
Although it didn't feel like three episodes, it kind of felt like one episode's worth of stuff, to be honest.
I think it's because it's a very transitional section, they spend a chunk of the end of the tenth episode setting up. Well, they spend a chunk of the start of the tenth episode sort of wrapping up loose ends, and then... The rest of it setting up for the next series.
I think this season is certainly better than the last season, but it's still got a lot of padding.
I don't know.
Yeah, even in episode 8, the Naomi stuff's a bit repetitive.
I know what they're kind of going for with it, saying
she's trying things, she's good, you know, but she's 8. But it's like, really? She's still got enough air to keep trying this again and again? Come on.
Yeah. And also, one of the things that I felt brought me out of it, and this is a stupid thing, right, is that she goes in and does the thing where she has to hold her breath and then comes out and then gasps for air, gets the air. It's like she's not giving herself anywhere near enough time to, like, you know, recuperate before going back out there. She's going in there with half a lung of air, and it's like...
I'm assuming there's cuts. Is there cuts? I mean, lots of time. I think
you're meant to think that time passes more than it does.
But I do. Yeah, I mean, what was
but obviously it's meant to be an urgency, you know.
I love the bit where she interferes with the signal to get her message out.
To change what her fake voice is saying. That is pretty good.
That's good, Naomi-ing. But the bits where she keeps going in, I think what we're supposed to take from that is, like, to see how, like, she's going through some shit, like, it's hard, and she's at the bottom, at the end of her, you know, whatever. Mm. But coming after so much repeated stuff of her on Marco's ship, I'm kind of tired of seeing that. I think without the repeated stuff on Marco's ship, that wouldn't have bothered me so much. But I did realize what the problem is with this season, I think. Not the problem for me necessarily, but the problem for the show is this season is not science fiction. The first season is quite heavily, it starts out space adventure, but then very quickly goes science fiction, and season 2 carries that on, you know, with the Eros in control of a fucking alien intelligence and being, you know, all, you know, and what the proto molecule, it's, you know, an existential threat, what is it, we don't know, that's like, you know, on the harder end of sci-fi. And this season has none of that at all. No. Nothing.
In fact, we sort of peripherally mentioned the proto molecule, and that's about it.
There's no big ideas it's not even
really fully war either. I mean, you've got the kind of, I don't know if excitement's there, but you've got the drama of the attack on Earth, and then the middle bit's kind of, and then finally we've got. Back to your favourite bits, the Earth parts, Drew, where the team are escaping from.
Earth parts were good. This
yeah, they were good, and the and of course we've got the political drama building up again, where essentially Avasarala. I don't know how reluctant she is, but she takes over again, basically.
Yeah, the political drama in this show is never substantial enough to stand up on its own. It can only be the glue.
It has to be part of the emerging story. It did seem sort of disconnected and a bit disjointed, really. The political stuff this season.
Well, the whole series, until the very end, really. Because there was no Rossanti crew, and they finally
there's no big idea. Again, in seasons 1 and 2, you've got a big overarching idea, and then you've got characters doing stuff within that, and so you get character moments.
Even in the last series, you kind of had that.
Yeah. But this doesn't have the big idea, so all you're left with is just the character moments, but the character moments not in service of anything particularly. It's just,
I think that's why the Naomi stuff seems so repetitive. There was no... there was no framing around it. It was just,
well, that's not character moments because it's only Naomi. It's not Naomi with somebody.
Well, it kind of was with Philip and with, you know.
He's not really a character.
He's
not developed as a character.
No,
he's the thing. He's
the motivation for
Naomi. Motivation, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. There's a word. I'm sure there's a word for it. Catalyst. It's like a, no, he's the thing that other characters bounce off of. It's often a role fulfilled by like women in a lot of like stuff. But in this case, it's Philip, and it's like they're the object to which the subject reacts, as it were. Like it's just like exactly.
There's no big overarching idea that we're wondering about. So it is just, for me, it's when Game of Thrones is at its worst, it's these two characters together, then these two characters together. Mm. And which is fun enough, but after a while you want something more substantial.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is,
I'd say a counterpoint to that. I think that the Amos and Clarissa character stuff is actually quite good, but they
have more story
hanging on that as well, though. To be fair, it's that they've got the survival thing. I mean, I suppose it's a sort of parallel, really, between Naomi trying to survive and get out of her situation and them trying to survive and get out of theirs. But theirs is just more compelling, you know.
Yes,
basically,
and also more conflicting. The thing about this one as well, going back to what you were saying about this not really being a sci-fi, when there was a scene that really brought me out of it with Naomi, where, because also as well, the character bits, Naomi's not the most interesting character. Like, but she's just not that interesting. You could describe her entire life in a monologue and it'd be fine. But there's a bit where she's pulling a cord or a strap and it's lifting up something heavy in space. And it's like, it's like this is Earth gravity, like it's not even Martian gravity, but it's like she's in space. This should be either zero gravity or some degree.
She's a floating engine. Yeah, I mean you are working against the object.
Mass
it's
is still
mass. Yeah, you've got to get moving.
But it's not going to be. That,
No.
And it's so clearly done and orientated as if it was gravity. Like if
and there's a lot of. There's a lot of Naomi just crying. There's a lot of stuff. People say things to Naomi, she just cries, or she's in a situation. I understand what she's going through is shitty.
Yeah.
But I think this might be. I blame the actor a little bit for this, maybe the director. But like, you know, maybe sometimes react with like anger, defiance. You know, like because it's the same reaction a lot to different things.
Yeah, you would go through. You would go through like a lot of different emotions in the space of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
it's good though. I mean, the Naomi bit when it gets to its point and she does the clever thing, that's fucking great. The Earth bit,
that's clever.
But the main meat of this season, the Marco stuff, is I think the weakest of this.
Yeah, that's
the problem. The problem is he's such good. You know, he's so good at the character.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Annoying that it's like last series when we thought they could have done more with him and built him up in a different way.
Well, I think the way I would say it is, I think. It would be a great character in a different show.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
He's a bit too pantomime for the Expanse, I think.
No, pantomime. I mean, he's not necessarily. I think what you said yesterday about him being both the political villain and the interpersonal villain, like the personal stuff detracts.
Robs the ambiguity as well. Is he a terrorist? It undercuts that question.
Yeah, because he's charismatic and nice, but then when you see him negging Philip, you're thinking, they've reduced the complexity of his character a little bit he is just a manipulative.
And he does
person.
It again, and he does it again in episode 8 as well. And it's like,
it's
like he's flicking a switch and suddenly being a different person or something.
Like, the story would almost be better if Marco was the well-intentioned freedom fighter and Philip was the egotistical, narcissistic one. That would have been...
Yeah, if they'd split them up a bit.
And then Naomi encountering that and going, oh, my son, possibly because he's been with his dad and he's in this world, but my son's a fucking monster. That might be more interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely, there you go, yeah. Have you considered being a writer for season 7? What else was it?
Drummer. drama. You see, the drummer stuff has got more drama in it as well. Same again, there's a lot of character stuff, but there's a lot more drama and story hanging around it.
Honestly, the drummer stuff, I think, is even weaker than the
film. I agree, actually. I
get what you're saying, but bias and favoritism for drummer and her crew and stuff.
I was excited
about them finally turning back again to being themselves.
I think drummer's at her best and her most watchable when her world is uncomplicated.
Yes.
When she's very clear about who the enemy is, very clear about who her friends are. Like when she's on the Behemoth, she's fucking great.
Yeah, I think you're right. The conflict and confusion is not her. But I did, I was going, yay, when she sort of helped the Ross and Andy.
Yeah, it's cool.
When she speaks to Holden on the radio, it's like, yes.
But that's after like 10 hours of soap spaceship soap opera. A bit of that is, again, when that's in service of something, it's good, but the show was good because it wasn't only that.
And also, I almost kind of feel...
Well, it's the same thing as the last series. It was they've got a lot of the elements that make the show great, but they've not got enough of them, or they're not mixing them up in the right proportions.
When did Amazon take over? Was it last season or this season?
Series 4.
Beginning of season 4,
first three series or sci-fi, and then it's three series Amazon.
It is when it went to Amazon.
I mean, I'm not being, no spoilers, but even the next series feels different still. But I think Chris is going to enjoy the next series.
I hope so, because I liked the end.
The build last... up at the end's good, yeah. Although, I mean, they built up on, yeah, let's not go, because remember we're doing three episodes, so we're not jumping to the end of one episode. We're jumping a whole episode there if we don't sort of.
In the words of House of Pain, jump around.
jump around. Yes.
Yes. The thing is, they could have taken the best parts of this season and the best parts of last season, and they couldn't go in one season.
Yeah, for a TV show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But we keep. It's like we're trying not to be nasty to them, but we keep pointing out that the Markle stuff should have been spread out better and interspersed.
Yeah. And to be clear, it's still good. It's never bad. It's still a good show.
I mean,
show.
It's better than loads of other stuff by
it's sad level, when it, what, the heights that they got to in season 1, 2, and 3, for me, season 1, 2, and 3 are the peak, and it's all tails off a bit after that. I mean, do you think it would be a better show overall had it ended at season 3?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So that sort of, lift you want
season,
more.
Season
kind of
3
thing.
Was a great, like, it had a great ending where, and what they should have done, in my opinion, is when Amazon took it over, is started a do the sequels, but don't do them as Expanse season 4, 5, and 6. Do it as...
A different story within that universe?
The Ring, The Ring, Ultimate 3, or the...
Well, this is the thing. The bias in the books after they discover the Rings... is more kind of that way, so it's interesting that they sort of. I think,
does it move away from Holden's ship crew?
A bit. There's still. I think. I'm trying to think now. Without. I don't.
Because I think Holden's crew. I think what Chris is saying is bang on. Actually, I think by the end of season 3, I think Holden's crew. They told their story.
Yeah.
There is a kind of a break in the books where. I don't want to say anything, because the other thing is I don't want to get confused between... See, there's quite a lot of difference from now in the books. Like, there was differences before, but there's quite a big difference. There's a lot more epic space opera stuff goes on in the books than they can sort of fit into a TV show. And they sort of concentrate in the next series on... just like a specific portion of what's going on. They built it all up. I'm not going to say anything that's not happened, with the build that doesn't have a build up or a pointer coming towards it. But the points they've picked out to set up as the build up is what we're going to get, basically. Obviously you'd expect that. They're not going to build stuff up and then not show the consequences. But it's. I'm trying to think how to articulate this without spoilers.
Okay, I've got an articulation.
Go on, you go.
Alex died of a stroke. What a laugh!
No, see that is completely different from the books.
Well, I figured that might be a big difference.
That's also different from how I remembered it. What I remembered was Amos just goes, I think I'm going to go home to my family, and just like returns to his home planet. That's how I remember it.
Amos.
I didn't remember. I did. Alex, sorry.
Oh, Alex. You didn't remember that he died?
I did not remember that he died.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm glad you got that back. Like, I'm glad you got that back.
I think that's an indication of how little it bothered me.
I laughed. I got a real shock about that, because that was like, I'm Poochie, I'm going my home.
Exactly.
He fell down the stairs. Goodbye. Like, it's just like.
Yeah.
I mean, even. Oh, by the way,
it was. Okay, it's almost like a PS. PS, Alex died. It was an action scene. PS, Alex died.
Like, Naomi cried more about any other thing.
Towards the end, when she's talking about how the crew became a family, and I love you.
And Alex.
I love Amos. And then she goes, and Alex.
Given everything that happened, I say that I'm surprised that, you know. I mean, obviously, we don't know the exact timings of everything, but, you know, IRL, as it were. But
Do you think that they didn't tell him what they did, right? Because obviously they filmed the scenes out of order, so no one has a complete idea. But the bit where he does the full burn, etc., right?
Mm.
Then the bit where he's dead, he's just
recovered from that. So they could easily have
CGI'd that, or just use a still frame and then put something. Like, they did. Well, the thing is,
I don't think you even have to bring the IRL stuff into it. I think this season was clearly, part of it was an experiment as to, can we make Alex an interesting character? And by the end of the season, it's clear that we cannot. No. So
the thing is, Alex in the books is, again, he's more endearing in the books, I would say. He is what he's aiming to be in the show, I think.
I think he's the actor. He just doesn't carry that, the cowboy kind of like character stuff. He doesn't really quite carry it. It seems forced. It seems like he's embarrassed when he's doing it. And that's the problem. He should be 100%.
I never thought about that. That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
They needed, like, Matthew McConaughey, who could pull that shit off. Not that they could afford Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, I don't think they should afford Matthew McConaughey.
They could get a real cowboy.
Yeah. Let's not dwell on it. Let's just do the same as the show and go, oh, Alex is dead.
Alex is dead, and I'm honestly, for the quality of the show, I'm happy about that. Less Alex is a good thing.
Their reaction as well, Amos was like, I heard Alex died.
Before I forget, there's one Amos bit that I find really, really a bit odd. And I don't know if it's out of character or if we're meant to spot something and take it a different way. But you know the bit where he's when he gets back to Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
Him and Clarissa get back to Baltimore and meet up with Eric, whatever his fucking name is.
I like him as a character. He's good.
Character. It's just the names. Like, it's one of those names that they've spelt.
Well, again, in with far fewer scenes, he's a far more likable character than Alex.
Yes.
And it's down to the acting.
Yeah. There was a part of me that thought, is he going to join the Ross and Anti crew?
So before I forget this, because it was just a little thing that I know, and I'm not taking any physical notes, so I just want to get the bit, Amos is walking up the stairs towards the roof to see him. Yeah. And he spots the creative tequila, and then when he says something about it, like, you know, when they all decide, like, oh, we're going to leave, we're going to try and get to the shuttle and get away, and he said the way that his facial expression and how he says it when he says, oh, should we take some of that tequila, it was a bit sort of childish, and I don't know if they were trying to put Eric and Timmy singing there, or if it was just Amos being cheeky.
I got cheeky. I like that bit.
No, but
I like that bit as well. But I think it.
There was something weird about it, and just
it's,
not quite.
I think Amos would usually be more direct, just like, "And we're taking the tequila."
Yeah,
but he goes,
yeah.
It's a bit MCU written. It's a bit like. You know, it's a bit Joss Whedon. It's a bit like, and we're taking this healer, right? Like,
I read it as
childhood friend, and I get the impression Eric is the older one. He's like the older brother figure,
right?
So I see it as a bit of a regression to childhood, not maybe playfully, not like you know,
not really, actually like, feeling inferior, but just sort of going, oh, yeah. It's just. I can get that from it, but the way it was, the way his face was and the way he said it, it was like the gears were, sorry, car metaphor in my head, but it was like the gears were just kind of like, not quite, you know.
I do agree. I enjoyed it, but it was a bit of a weird way for Amos to act.
Okay. But yeah, no, I like the. Also, what the bit that actually brought me out a little bit was Peach's story. It's like, hang on, you've just met this guy who's a little bit on. He's a little bit of an unknown quantity, and it's like you're just gonna share.
I think that's on point for. I think she's an oversharer. She's grown up in a world with no threats, so she's not guarded.
But why didn't the other guy, what's his name again? Eric. Why didn't Eric just be like, shut the fuck up?
No, I think it was relevant.
What she said is what convinced them. What point what pushed them in the right direction?
Yeah, but she managed to lay out a full story in what was a relatively tense
I mean, that's the thing in this scene. It's like she diffuses things.
She diffuses it when the military rent a cops turn up the first time. She diffuses it when Eric Amos
fucks that up.
Eric,
it was a moral choice. It wasn't a strategic choice.
She diffuses it when Eric and Amos are kind of like ready just to shoot the fucking people. And I like she points out that they were seasonal workers, not rich people. You know,
I don't. This is the question. Okay, so the morality here was something I was leveling out in my head because it parallels a little bit to the Earth response to the Minaris.
Yeah,
and they're talking about, oh well, we do Palace Station. There's more like 16,000 people on there, so it's a much smaller target. There are no military targets in the belt. So it's a little bit like what we were talking about with, like, some of the excuses they use in Gaza. Yeah. Mm. Like, where it's like, you know, they're guerrilla fighters. How many times has that excuse been used? We'll bomb a hospital or whatever because they're using it as a base. Or we'll bomb a civilian location because there are no military targets. And this was, that kind of thing. Mm. And it's like, even if they did blow up Palace Station with much smaller targets than the 2 million that hit got by that. Like, you're the it's the lesser wrong, right? You're still not as wrong as they were, but it's still like that doesn't automatically like make it the good thing to do, right? Like,
I think it's complicated, but I think what you say Marco isn't a legitimate authority.
Yeah.
There's a difference between, say if Germany nuked America, then America nuking Germany is still awful, but, you want to say that. If some German terrorists nuke America, that's a different...
If some Saudi Arabian terrorists were to attack the US and then they were to attack Iraq in response, that would be fucked up. Oh, wait a minute.
They would never do such a thing. It's kind of a little bit different when it comes to Amos and Clarissa and the rest. They're going up against those. They're not a real authority either. They're a pseudo authority.
No, not at all. No. I think they might have killed somebody who's stolen the uniforms, even. I don't even know.
Yeah, like, and also, yeah. Eric points out that it says something like, you're terrible. This is the worst shakedown I've ever seen. Is this your first time? You know?
Yeah.
And it is, because that's what they're basically trying to do, is they're sort of trying to say, they start off saying, we're the local authority, we're the authority here, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, come on, we're taking your stuff.
You're not. So arguably, the ethical thing to do would be to gun them down there and then, for a few reasons. One, they're going to come back, so more people are just going to die. Like
What if they had people already lined up to protect them?
Well, they were just doing a shakedown. Like, they'd much more likely come back with more than
tactically,
they had there.
I'm just thinking tactically,
Well, tactically, they just stormed the place if they had that many people. If they...
this is why he beats me at war games.
But if they shut them down there, like, the chances are they're going to go further on and shake down a bunch of other people. I feel that Clarissa might have been in the wrong to give the benefit of the doubt.
This is going to get philosophical very quickly, but, like, you can only be responsible for your actions, and she's like, let's not kill people when we don't have to. Like, we're not responsible for their actions,
carrying a lot of guilt for having... that one engineer guy that she killed.
But on the other side, letting them go is also an action, and you've got to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
And they could hurt other people as well. Yeah.
They might be just... As far as anybody knows in that situation, they might be... They might just be chancers. They might be, they might be organised. They might go and scam somebody else. Doesn't seem like there's a ton of people on that island.
They gave the choice.
I think the moral choices are either we don't know the implications here, so we shouldn't kill people if we don't have to, like Clarissa's choice. But also, that's the thing. Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing in that situation. Amos is not wrong either. Like, they're all going to come back. They are going to probably try and scan.
And they did. More innocent people died as a result of it.
For sure. Yeah. But I don't think either point was right or wrong. It's just nobody's got perfect information there.
No. It's you're making a guess. Like, it's a gambling way.
And killing somebody out of a guess.
Whilst true, we've got to look at these are people with body armor and big guns. These weren't desperate people with a couple of pistols.
For sure.
It is
a bit of a pre-crime thing.
They let them go. They said, look, turn around, walk away. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Like, they signed on to a fight. They showed up with guns, they showed up with vests, and they refused to go away.
Yeah. I'm sympathetic to Clarissa's way of looking at it, but...
Yeah, no, sympathetic. Like,
yeah.
And I do think that if I was in that circumstance, I probably would be on Clarissa's side. Like, I'm not... But I'm acting particularly with hindsight.
Well, what I particularly enjoy about that scene is Amos, just through his facial... I mean, he says they'll be back later, but just through his facial expressions, he communicates to the audience that, like, that was a mistake. But he's defending his friend. He's like,
yes,
let my friend make a mistake. But that was a mistake. He firmly believes that's a mistake. Yeah.
And I know that we're supposed to take away the sort of the naivety of Clarissa's upbringing of she never having, not having threats, and accepting that when people walk away, they don't generally come back, or they don't come back shooting. Were they after the ship?
Well, they were once she opened her bloody mouth, By the way, we've got something even more valuable you might want back here. I'll just tell you about that.
I mean, I think their thinking was this is going to be a disaster situation. We're not going to have, there's going to be like no food deliveries or anything for a while, so we just want resources, I think was their thinking. And they would have killed everybody, for sure.
Yeah, well, a few mouths to feed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then
there's a really upsetting bit where they're having the kind of banquet before they got on the ship, and essentially the house servants that the rich people have to look after the people who are shining in the house, they just treat them as servants.
That seems more of a Clarissa thing, really. But it is Clarissa, like I say, I was speaking over Chris a bit earlier, and I realised. What I was saying was that Clarissa points out that the people that come, the second group of people that join in, that come to the place, other than the fake military, they you know, she points out that they have staff, not the rich people, you know. She says, these are out of season staff that are working at the houses.
Yeah.
I think she's
actually the one who treats them with the most humanity now, because she's, you know, she was at the top, she had that privileged position, and then she's been in prison, she's been at the bottom. Yeah. So I think she's gained perspective for sure.
But also, is it like sort of symbolic as like during periods of respite, the natural order seems to sort of creep back in?
I think it's Eric who's the most willing to sort of treat them that way.
Well, Eric's used to be the boss of everybody.
Mm.
And well, he would have treated any of them like that, really, I think, Eric.
Well, he's also got, you know, the lookout for number one kind of thing going on, which Amos at the start of the show had. Amos, you know, number one and two, he and Naomi. But that's been dissolved over time with his, you know,
well,
with
the relationship with the bigger crew.
It gets bigger, exactly, yeah.
Mm. Which actually I kind of like that, and I like that they actually kind of discuss that.
I think the tribe thing is a really strong idea that the show does really well. And I think Avasarala's speech, her argument why we shouldn't bomb these civilian targets is really fucking good. Would never happen at that level of government. It's ridiculous.
No,
it's absurd.
No.
But
she points out the truth of it all, though, doesn't she? You're just going to radicalize more people.
And I think this is really interesting to me. She does literally what... Do you remember Admiral Man from several seasons ago who did the exact same thing? He's like, I can't be part of this, I'm quitting. Mm. And then she meets with him afterwards and says, that was stupid. You're better off in the room than not in the room, essentially. You're better off in the room than influencing.
Oh, yeah!
That shows her growth. She's like, okay, there is a line. It's not always better to be in the room. Like, there is a moral point where you should have, you know, wash your hands.
But the thing is, like, so the transport secretary, he's like, he comes in as reasonable. And even that speech that he gives was like, I thought it was a really good speech.
It's a good speech, but there's notes of like, oh, this is quite, it's a very aggressive, very Marshall. Mm. And I think that's where you start to see, like, oh, is he?
No, I think that's the speech you give at that time, regardless of how you're going to act. But
well,
then
that's pretty much what Avasarala says to him.
Yeah. But then he becomes President Man. And then he starts,
fair, even Avasarala did when she was president. I think there's a very strong message that the position.
Yeah,
it's more about the position than the person in the position, which is very. I mean, that's Marxism.
They take a guy who's from what I feel is a humble background, and then they elevate him to the top position, and then maybe it was the same thing with President Mann, albeit he's more of a template.
Well, we never saw him before, so we don't have the sympathy for him. But yeah, with Avasarala President Mann,
he just turns up as like the survivor in the line of succession.
End of the process. Yeah,
Well, we kind of always knew that President Mann was a bit vapid. He was just elevated because he's good at speeches.
He was a fucking bubblehead.
Yeah,
I love that he just says whatever the last person. I think it's what's his name? Early show character. I can't remember the name. Well, the UN second dude, who's kind of semi villain in.
Aaron Wright.
Yeah, Aaron Wright. Like, just like if the last person he spoke to was a fucking janitor, he'd be like espousing the merits of a mop or something like that. It's great.
The thing is, Aaron Wright might have actually been the best number one.
Yeah,
right. Like, because he had an ideology, he had a vision.
Ah, but he was also just like most politicians we've got now, corrupt and interested in money.
How corrupt was he? I mean, don't get me wrong.
He was quite happy to go along with Jean-Pierre Mao, who basically chemical warfare an entire
but
colony.
The way he tells it, the way Aaron Wright tells it,
Holocaust aside, yeah.
The way Aaron Wright tells it, he's a student of Avasarala, and it's Earth Comes First stuff, right? It's something Avasarala might have done in the same situation. So we don't know whether it was the money and he was corrupt, or whether he genuinely believed in the...
Well, that was the best way to do it, or the best way to do it.
I mean, I'm quite sympathetic to Aaron Wright, actually.
Yeah, you would be.
Well, when
I don't know what that means. I just said it. Just
well, because I suppose you need something to withstand the pressures of the office.
The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune,
and that's like hard to find even in Avasarala. Like the thing is, we've had how many people? We've had like four people at the top, No, hang on. We've had Mann, we've had Amisrella, we've had Transport Secretary. Oh, and we've had Mao.
Mao, yeah.
Not Mao. That's not her name.
Not Mao. Yeah.
Gao. And probably Gao's probably the best of them.
Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah, we saw the list of her, and she was basically the
peacetime leader, though.
Yeah,
she was at the interim before another conflict.
But I do think it's interesting. Yeah, other than Gao, who wasn't there for long enough, and also we didn't see enough of. Yeah, the office does limit you. The office turns you into president.
Well, this is what we were always saying early on, is that Avasarala had a good position, being sort of third in line. Or third in command,
enough influence
without being tied down by, you know, having to justify lots of stuff to anybody other than those two, basically.
So I did, you know, it's a problem of the office, is the obvious thing of the show. And then she won. Avasarala won the coup, right?
Well, it's not. This is the thing. It was kind of a coup, but not really. I think he just realized where things were going, and the vote of no confidence was what
it wasn't a coup. They used the proper legal method.
Yeah. But
she's not in control yet. This is just going to be an election.
Yeah, and they can't really do an election in the middle of a war. Basically,
so I'm guessing, but I could be wrong. They're going to bring in a new character for the election against Avasarala.
I honestly can't remember. I didn't remember Alex died, so I'm not lying at this point.
How did you think Alex left? Oh, you thought he left to go back to
the office? I thought he just left. I'm going to go, we've done a job now, we're going back to Mars. Mars needs my help more than...
Have you read any of the books, Drew?
I started reading the first one, and it read so close to the show that I was kind of like, I'm just reading what I've seen in the show.
It definitely diverges a lot more as you go on.
Yeah.
Yes. We've talked about the show the whole time. My God, what's wrong with us?
This is insane. And before we get too tangent, I do want to talk about my favourite bit of the whole season. Right towards the end of the last episode, where Amos goes up to Holden and goes,
The logic is brilliant, but he obviously leaves some information out in Holden's side of the conversation, for Holden.
Remember when you said you wanted to kill me, and you don't now, so people can change, right? And Jim's like, yeah, cool, you're good
pictures,
come on.
That's a really Amos moment, that's excellent. It's Amos logic, but it's unassailable logic, really. You know.
Yeah, once he's agreed to it,
And
Jim's face when she walked past him as well. He's like, what do we do in this situation?
Yeah. And that's it. She doesn't sort of show many hostility or particular friendship. She's just like, okay, there's it. Let's follow Amos. And he's like,
so is she the new
pilot? Is this my
then?
Ship anymore? What's happening?
because Naomi's alive. Yeah, no.
Oh, sorry, I missed what she said.
Is she the new pilot?
I don't know if she's a pilot. I was surprised Bobby didn't. I thought Bobby was going to turn up on the ship as well. But, oh no, of course not, because she's now Avasarala's aide.
Does Grumpy Man stay on as pilot, maybe?
Well, Bull. I don't know.
Bull, yeah.
I honestly can't remember.
There's a bit of Bull that made me chuckle, where he goes... Something skinny.
Once he's been told off for using racial epithets, he sort of starts to catch
up. I like how that was handled, because Jim recognises that, like, he's not being racist in an active sense. He's G-ing himself up to dehumanise these people so he can kill them. And Jim's like, we don't do that here. And he's like, fair enough. You're in charge.
Point taken.
I know that this is exactly manufacturing of the show, but I did warm up to Bull towards the end.
I care
about you more into him. Yeah. I think once you see how upset he is about Johnson getting killed, and see that he was quite, although he disagreed with him a lot, he was very loyal and caring about him.
What you eventually realise is that he's macho bluster, but he doesn't really mean it.
Mm.
That's his job, basically. He plays
the
role. And there's a bit where they sort of explicitly acknowledge that. When I think he and Jim are talking about Johnson, and then at the end of it, Bull just says to Jim, he just says something like, "That's why you and I don't get along." And Jim laughs, and like,
Well, I mean, God, it'd be interesting if he does stay on this pilot. But anyway, anyone's better than Alex. Clarissa's better than Alex. I think Clarissa would be a decent pilot because she was probably training. She might, but this is a bit of a stretch, might be better than her sister. What's her sister called again?
Julie,
that's it, yeah.
Well, isn't there a bit in the early season where it's one of the flashbacks where she's talking to her dad and her dad's like, Julie's disappeared, she won't be able to enter the race. And Clarissa's like,
Clarissa can fly.
And he says, so that implies at least she knows,
both of them could fly the Razorback.
Because she's like the meritocratic, not necessarily the meritocratic system, but like she might have tried harder to be a better pilot.
Have you warmed to Clarissa?
I think you absolutely.
Yeah, you would have been amused as to why I loved her. when she's introducing that. Yeah.
Yeah. She's an entirely different character from from the last season. I get it. She's kind of interesting and 10 times more interesting than Alex. So if she is the pilot, then welcome aboard.
Is it? So last series was the rag on the show thing, and this series is the rag on Alex thing.
No, he's dead. In memorandum, Alex.
So we don't know why they decided to kill him off. Could it be real life?
No, it was the real life stuff.
It was real life stuff.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
And thus,
I think him being shit certainly helped.
Yes.
You know, if it was Jim who did some dodgy stuff, you know, would it have been as easy? Or Amos, for fuck's sake. The show without Amos would be half the show for me.
Yeah, at least Alex had the decency to be
shit in the first place.
Shit in the first place.
Or Kazan wanted.
So there is one thing towards the end.
Jews disappeared.
We do discover that Mars are in on it. I've got to get this right now. Some Martian ships are aligning with Marco, right?
Well, see, this is what we discovered, the other part of the deal from that conspiracy.
Yes.
And the other part of the deal from that conspiracy was that the people in the Barkeith, so the dodgy admiral and his assistant woman, who spent time with Alex. I've been pregnant. They've still got the Martian ideal in their head, but they want to do it somewhere else.
Yeah. And
Marco's side of the deal with them was to let them through the ring in peace, let them go and establish themselves somewhere else, Laconia.
Well, if they're in control of the ring gate, they can just divvy up all the ring worlds between them, right?
Exactly, I don't know if you caught all of the details, but there's a minefield at one side of one of them, So basically, Laconia's cut off, essentially, and he's given it in the way that Earth or Mars would give something else to that the Belters already have to someone else. A lot happens in that end sequence. It's quite...
Yeah.
It's probably better if Chris asks questions than me trying to explain it, because I'm going to trip over myself trying to get through all the different details. So, Chris, go for it.
Okay. Before I do this, I'm assuming...
And Chris Stevens as well, of course.
Of course. I'm assuming that things on Ilis are just ticking over hunky dory since we haven't heard from them, right? They're just mining.
Have any Ilis.
I will say anything that I answer isn't a spoiler and isn't me trying to bullshit you, because literally the only thing I remember about the next season is the last scene of the last episode, which is actually nothing to do with anybody we know. Which is, I guess, in itself a Mars spoiler, but I don't remember. I don't remember a single fact about the next season.
I knew that because I talked about something that I thought happened at the end of the series, and you were like, blank.
No idea what you're talking about.
But I realise now that it's Ham's next series.
All right. So, but it, to me, it makes sense that the dodgy admiral and his assistant, like, they are expanding the Mars ideal in the only way they realistically can at this point. So they're the two options.
They talk in slightly worrying terms about with like
purity.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a definite sort like, of.
I mean, purity. Yeah, if they just mean purity of ideals, you know, fair enough. But
that is by the letter what they were writing.
But had implications.
like the bracelet is like, oh, gotta get that sentiment. And it's like, really?
That's it. He wanted everything to be by the book, and yeah.
That's very much like a bit in Star Trek where one of the Bajoran
bloody hell
crew.
I keep forgetting wearing, you know about Star Trek.
Wearing the thing on area, yep. and I think
the Admiral.
Oh, it's
Admiral Kirk from Battlestar Galactica.
It's when they bring in a different captain because Picard's shit, and everybody thinks he's a hard ass, but then he turns out to just be good at his job, unlike Picard.
Jellico,
well remembered. That's a great fucking episode. Anyway, sorry, Star Trek stuff.
But the thing about that sort of cancels it all out is they get eradicated or something.
I thought you knew what was happening because it's
No. I thought that was just.
It's one of the few times where you have to really think back because it's so long since you've seen a protomolecule or the other enemy things. And
I was going to do that. I'm not saying that.
All I said is you've got to think back. That's all.
Yeah. You've got to think back to the last episode where you had the builders and the other aliens, and they were fighting, and then the builders were blue, and then the other ones were like red, because in the station at the end there was some red finagling going on, and it evaporated in a very spacey way, in a very protomolecular way, but it wasn't blue; it was red. Now, also, it's become very clear that the journalist lady, whose name I keep forgetting, I should write this down again. It's Monica?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure that's easy.
And she's worked out that, when we knew at the beginning of the episode, the last episode, that there was no trace of protomolecule at all whatsoever. So we kind of, I inferred from that the protomolecule was not on that ship. The self-destruction was a decoy. I kind of thought that in the last episode where it did happen, was earlier, and where it self-destructed, because I thought, oh, that's strange. Did it self-destruct? Did it blow up? Did I miss something? And I didn't miss it. They did self-destruct. And then I think Hamish said, that might have been just so that no one can have a type of thing. Great decoy, by the way. So the protomolecules is...
Have they explicitly said from a source who knows what they're talking about that the protomolecule does still exist?
Could exist, I think.
Naomi says it could. Naomi says it's possible, but do we get it from an authority?
No, what she says is possible that it could have been on that missile that was straight.
Yeah.
But we do in the episode know that they're sending the protein molecule to Cortazar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Cortazar conversation.
Yeah, there's a Cortazar conversation.
Say no more, sorry. Carry on.
And so I think it's Mars or a Mars-affiliated thing that are trying to get the protein molecule and Cortazar together to do something. Hang on a minute. I gotta remember this. I'm remembering it. Something, the station in the ring. Are they gonna decode the station in the ring or something like that? Work out the source code, reverse engineer it, look on GitHub or something.
Am I allowed to talk?
Yeah, go on. Correct me.
Right, well, they discovered.
Before Hamish is allowed to talk. So, when they're going through the gateway and the red aliens do the red alien shit. That killed them.
Yeah, the red aliens kill the...
Because I just read that as symbolic, because, you know, every time Jim went through it, he saw the red aliens doing
No, you see everything being dispersed.
Yeah, I thought that was symbolic. I thought that's just like a moment in time where the red aliens were poking around and then it
can, so can I, literally can died. Can I point back a bit at something that, that may help you, why that is to be understood, or why that's understandable. If you remember the vision that the Doctor had at the end of Series 3 when she got connected with the it's part of that vision.
So we know
they're all just been dispersed into space, basically.
Okay, I missed that bit completely. I think I might have noticed that on previous watches, but I missed
trying
that.
To watch three episodes is kind of the end is kind of crammed. I think they could have cut in the middle a bit and gave us more of that.
Or put more of that through the rest of the season.
So the red aliens, the bad guy aliens, whatever you want to call them, let's call them red and blue. The red aliens destroy the Barkeith and kill the crew. Now, the thing that Cortazar's talking about, it's not the station, it's Laconia, the planet they're going to, or the system they're going to. Laconia, yeah, you can see the outside of the ship being destroyed as well, and that, same thing is sort of...
So it's like an orangey red, it's a very deep, I like that colour, it's a nice colour.
It's a nice colour, yeah.
Aesthetically, I might go on that.
Basically disassemble them at a very, very small level, very low, tiny level.
Can I be red aliens instead of UN now?
No. You've made your bed, you're lying on it.
No, you can defect. we're allowed to defect. Okay, Bobby can defect.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so, but what they're talking about, that Cortazar wants to do, And what's going to happen with the protomolecule and the plan, or the, I don't know if you call it a plan because it seems very cavalier and reckless, but bringing all the stuff together is basically then trying to do a controlled version of what happened on Illis without the Rocinante there to stop them, basically. So what Cortazar wants is some protomolecule to investigate the evil aliens' plan, you know, underground structure, because he talks about underground structure.
The thing that I believe, unless maybe I'm wrong about this, but the thing I believe that was unique about Illis was the bomb, the red, you know, the orb thing, the bomb that the red aliens left. That's what made Illis of particular interest to.
This is all throughout the. Yeah. This is throughout. This is their technology. That's why those.
No, this is the red. That's the red alien technology. What's Hatman's name?
Miller.
Miller describes it as a bomb that the red aliens left to destroy. Yeah. That's on every planet?
Possibly. I'm not going to say anything because we're going to find out what's on Laconia next series.
That's true.
I'll tell you what, I'll just tell you everything that happens on Laconia now, and that way you don't have to watch the last series. So obviously you can
see it's getting good now, though.
So you can see that we're going back through the rings. We're going to Laconia. Things happen there, obviously that's the point of the episodes in the series, but what I'm trying to explain in this one is what they're talking about before they go there. You know, in this episode what they're talking about is Cortazar, remember, a bit disconnected from from consequences and reality, wants a protomolecule to try and interact with the red aliens technology on that planet, like they did by accident on Illis. That's kind of what he seems to, you know, that's the sort of vague gist of what he wants. And
what happened on Illis?
What happened bad on Illis? Did you just ask?
No, sorry, you said, how was the red aliens technology interacting with the blue aliens technology, the builders, on Illis again?
It was in the Rocinante. And that's how Miller got to come with them.
And so the spikes coming out of the Illis ground, they were the red aliens technology.
That's the feeling I get.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because they're protomolecule. I think Miller specifically.
You've got me. I'm confusing myself now. Sorry, you're right. I've said the wrong aliens at some point here. Yeah, the underground structures and everything match the Illis stuff, and they want to interact with that because that's why he wants protomolecule. Sorry, to interact with.
So nothing to do with the red aliens so far.
No, but the red aliens have reacted to all of this.
Yeah,
destroying the Barkeith and releasing whatever the big tentacle space station, spaceship thing is. Now, I think, I'm just going to read something. Bear with me a second to just double check I've not forgot something or added something. Yeah, and they're attacked by strange... Yeah, so on the ship, I mean, that's the other thing. When the Barkeith gets destroyed, there are sort of weird, wispy alien things there as well from the Red Alien faction. And then...
It's beautiful.
I was kind of half going to go into the next bit, so I'm not going to say anything else. But we see, obviously, the same... The visions that that Doctor Woman had... Like the big tentacle space station, spaceship thing, which obviously is very similar to the thing that created the ring. Remember when the came out of Venus? Have you got the picture, Chris? You want to move your head out of the way a second? Oh, no, that's the Barkeith being destroyed still. Sorry. Yeah. I thought, when you said, oh, it's beautiful, I thought you meant you found a picture of the...
Oh, I found another picture of the... The thing is, it's one of those pictures where stills don't really do it justice.
No, that's true.
I've got this one.
Maybe for future things we could sit. Nah, it seems like effort.
effort is off. It's beautiful when it's moving.
Yeah,
when it's moving, you can see that it's some sort of controlled entity. There's the more mechanical bit for further on as well.
Right
at the end, basically. There's the tentacle thing, like the physical tentacle thing, not the wispy tentacle.
That's what you said about tentacles in chat.
That was it.
Okay.
So, just watched it that way. Why you get? You'll get that because you saw tentacles.
Tentacles at the end.
Yeah, it's a bit like the thing that came out of Venus and created the ring.
Hang on a minute.
But all of this is basically the Doctor's vision.
Right, so aliens come in and the I see. But they're kind of like black tentacles, right?
Yeah, but because it's a more mechanical looking thing. Not the wispy alien creatures themselves.
Oh.
I can't be asked to come through it to look for it. I've shut the window now, so...
I can't find them.
Maybe it's just before that or something. Oh, God. It's in amongst that scene anyway. I think it's the last thing. I thought it was the last thing you see. Hang on. I'll bring it up again.
Right. So they're going towards the thing, the ring.
Oh no, it's actually when the titles start, that's why.
Oh right.
When did you start before the titles start? Oh right. 54 minutes 30 roughly.
Right, let's see. I did notice the titles were different, but
I see.
Okay, let's have a look. Okay, so
you know what, I'd never noticed that. I think I just when the titles play, I just quit.
See, that's why you missed stuff before as well. Yeah, so the Barkeith gets disintegrated instead of getting through the ring properly. Then, as all the wisps of that disappear, we've got the shimmering ring. Yeah,
so it must be implied that this is on a planet rather than in space, because that's my understanding.
This is the view from Illus. It's from Laconia, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
So now over Laconia, there's this thing.
Don't put content in the titles, you fuckers.
That's a low blow on their part.
It is.
I watch titles, so, you know, that's why I'm good at quizzes, because I remember all the names of producers and actors and stuff sometimes. You know, getting older.
You know. Oh, that looks cool. You don't see much of it. It's still wispy through clouds.
But it's got a sort of central, you know, a sort of core part, and then the tentacles.
What's that lizard with a big neck frill? It kind of looks like that.
That's from Jurassic Park.
Not the one from Jurassic. That's Dilophosaurus. Oh, you get a good view right at the end of the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah, clear view.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, it's like a sort of octopusy. It's very like the thing that came out of Venus. It's like a sort of central mechanical ship thing with lots of tentacles.
It's also got a double helix. It's got two spirals going in opposite directions.
That's like the technology that made the edge of the ring as well.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. So it's building something, and it's glowing blue. So it's been activated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is a good.
Yeah,
oh,
it is literally right at the end. And it flashes, so it flickers blue. Yeah, I really thought you guys had noticed that.
So, never have you seen that.
It didn't go into my brain because it was in credits.
You ignore credits. Yeah. Somebody needs to.
That's why you've not got the spoilers by watching the start credits, because they change every time. You know.
Oh, I can't be asked to sit through a fucking CGI.
There we go. What's it? Hang on a minute. There we go. That's what it looks like. I don't know if you want to make it big. If you want to make it big.
Hang on, I'll make it big.
Make it big for Chris.
There we go. Chris is now big. Your arm's in the way, but other than that, it's big. Remember, we're looking at a flat thing, not something. We don't have an angle. Yeah, you know. There we go. That's better, yeah. So something's starting to be built in a protomolecule-y kind of way. So I wonder if that means... This is the one thing I'm not sure about. I wonder if that means the missile's already gone through the ring. It must do. Does it mention... Does Cortazar mention that he's got the missile yet? I can't remember.
I think you're right, though. It must be present.
Yeah, it must be present for the ring for that to react, yeah.
Yeah.
So right, sorry, because I keep saying the wrong aliens. I've done it a bazillion times already and got them wrong. So, to be clear, the stuff on the planets is blue aliens. Let's just stick with blue and red. It makes it easier. Okay. Blue and red. So the blue aliens, the protomolecule people, well, I think protomolecule technology might be just the technology of that advancement, really. So the blue alien stuff on the planet that Cortazar's found, he wants to fuck about with, and he needs a protomolecule to activate it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was what was promised to him, and he's got that. But that's making this happen at the planet, or inside, around the ring, maybe. I think it's the planet. Mm-hmm. And so there's a reaction from a protomolecule thing to make something, again, another structure. But the red aliens have reacted to all of this and have destroyed the Barkeith. I think I've kind of got myself straight now.
Okay, yes.
I've not got it in chronological order, but I've at least got the salient points the right way around now, instead of saying the red and the you know. Yeah.
That's made me excited for season 6, because like I say, I've got a fucking clue what happens.
That's weird that you don't remember. I mean, I remember quite a few details of it, yeah. I mean, I will say there's the war with the belt's still going on, obviously, because that's left hanging. So we still get, I'm afraid to say, we still get Philip and Marco.
That's something that disappointed me about season 5, actually, is needed to defeat Marco to have a cap on it. And like, have Philip take over, maybe? Like, if you want to carry on that stuff, well, have Philip.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different sort of story after this, though, really. Because the war's ongoing, but obviously, the battleground has become huge again because they've gone through.
I think I only really like Marco. Like, a good performer does a good job with what's written, but I only really like Marco when he's giving speeches. He's good at speeches.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so coming into season 6, what we've got left hanging is Marco and Philip, the surviving Rossi crew are back together.
Yeah, about bloody time.
I know.
They all survived. Nobody died, did they?
Nothing important.
I love when they're all meeting up and Naomi goes, so Alex died. I know you two were really close to Amos. Amos kind of goes,
really? So that's you've got your Russ and Anthony crew back together. You've got your Philip and Marco. You've got your Avasarala back in charge on Earth and Luna, and Bobby with Avasarala, and you've got your protomolecule and mad scientist in a system called Laconia. You've got a minefield somewhere around that ring of Laconia, either inside or outside. I can't remember which. And you've got the other. Well, we've got Drummer being now not in Marco's faction. and I can't remember if they're heading to, I can't remember where they're going, or if they just split up and that was it. Because obviously we've also got, what's the behemoth called now? Something Station?
Medina Station.
So we've got Medina Station coming back into play as well. Although I'm not even sure who's in charge over there anymore. Everybody was dead, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not dead, Dave. yeah. So anyway, Chris, any Chris? So do we have any, well, and since Drew doesn't remember any of it, do you have any ideas where it might go?
Okay,
I mean, so obviously it's time for me to poker face because I do remember what happens. So
I mean, the real problem with the last series, and to a degree a lot of the series before that, was that we were not in the most interesting part of the world that was created, because what I wanted to know straight after at the end of season 7 was what's going on at that central end of season 3 is what I don't know where 7 came from. It's like how do the rings work? How does this central station work? What is the history that led to this being built?
Yeah, they do just sort of drop that in there and then go away for a while, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the show is very intentional about not giving us that, because that would be I understand why if I was writing a novel and write about this kind of thing, as soon as you start to explain that, then it's kind of an unending, you're spiraling into, like, you know, writing about those aliens rather than about,
yeah, like how did the universe begin? Well, the big one, well, so where did that,
which is,
how did
which
that
is
happen,
to an extent, I think Mass Effect's problem. I think Mass Effect would be better had it not explained stuff, that kind of stuff.
I don't know, because, like, why aren't you writing about the most interesting part of your world?
Because I was going to say, because then you're just making stuff up, but obviously it's
have you ever like read a story about a character and the most interesting part of their character was, like, in the past?
Well, you know, but I think this is different, because it is something that is it's completely ungrounded. I think stories, this kind of story, at least, you can write a story like that, but I think it would have to be that from the beginning.
It is kind of that from the beginning.
No, it's not about the proto people, the blue aliens. The show's never about them. It's about humans encountering this ancient, the remnants of this
the
ancient
thing,
and not knowing. Like, there's no way for them to know the history or whatever.
It's a tantalizing question, but as soon as you make that show,
you've lost the grounding.
And isn't that what Cortazar's story thread is about? Is about discovering more.
Yeah.
You know, his motivation, presumably.
Mm. I mean, he's an interesting character. I would like to have just seen more of him, to be honest, as well. Like,
I mean, I do, like what you said, of course, me, just as a person watching the show, I'd love to know all about the proto-molecule people and what their civilization was like, what they were doing, you know, how were they mean or not.
That's a different story, right?
But I think, yeah, as soon as you go down that hole, you're forever explaining that and telling more stories within that rather than
I think there are ways to do it. Like, they could discover things, and then there could be parallels.
Well, you
and Joe
are going to write,
like,
season 7, aren't you?
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's part of the Amazon deal.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you can tie it into a little bit, you know, like the theme of, like, you know, some of the big themes are, like, you know, the revolving of the wheel, things, or, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The human nature is always that little bit more exploitative and predatory, and then power tends to corrupt people, or people are so personally compromised by power that it's the institution itself that's the problem, not necessarily the actors within it. So you can apply those kind of themes to the aliens at the same time as applying them to people like Abba Sorella and President Mann and Mr. Public Transport and all that kind of stuff. And I think you could have a women's story, and you don't need to explain everything that the aliens are doing or how they did it, but, like, little glimpses into.
I think it's possible to do that, but I think it's dated. That can very quickly go off the rails, and you can end up making Avatar.
But during the times when The Expanse did that, that to me was at its most compelling.
But it's because I think it's
because of the human interaction, though. It's the human reactions to it, and the human.
But also because it's just glimpses, and you're left with more questions than answers. It's like in the monster films. Like as soon as you see the monster, you've dissolved all of the tension and all of the mystery and all of the.
Mm.
I think maintaining the mystery, I think, is more.
Which is arguably why the series maybe should have ended at season three.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
And in that case, that would have rounded it off, and I am generally
and I mean that is what's unsatisfying about series four is that they don't really stuff and don't I mean they could have spread out like well we said so we're going over old ground here but there's like three different threats that they get in the last two episodes or something that they could have spread out throughout the show
I think season one to three could have been the human story and then if you're going to carry on do what Chris is saying. Have it, but it was, with a a solid sort of cut between the two.
Call it a different show. Have a different name, like how House of the Dragon done with Game of Thrones. Like House of the Dragon, a different show, and or like call it like Expanse Stories or Stories from the Expanse or whatever. Like, you know.
I'm fine with having the same name so long as it's a solid. It's not you get rid get rid of all your characters and it's clearly a different story. Like I'm fine,
Digimon season.
But I do worry it could quickly become the Avatar or fucking Narnia or something. It's just if you're just writing about a boundless world that you're just making up, that's a very different show. Mm,
exactly. Like, and you guys are going to completely chastise me for this one, but I kind of like how they did that with Star Wars now, where like all these little series is they just take part in the Star Wars world.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's different because it's still in that grounded world.
It just happens that one of them particularly is really shit and one of them is a bit wobbly.
I think the purpose of the aliens, it's kind of like Star Trek. Like if you watch Star Trek and they encounter, as they often do, like ancient, all-powerful beings that were remnants of prior civilizations, the only point that serves in the show is how the characters we love respond to it. That's what's interesting.
And to whatever they've left behind.
Mm-hmm. You could have a show about that ancient civilization, but that is very much a different show.
Any theories then, Chris, we've got our story threads. Where do you what do you think might, or what would you like to what would you like to do? Let's go for the most human one first would be Avastrala and Bobby. Where do you think they're going with things?
Marriage.
I don't know. Like, I think
she's single now. Abisarella is single now.
So I think a lot of the themes are going to carry through, which is they're going to have like a lot of tough decisions to make. Things like, do we? Because of course there's no civilian, there's no military targets with Marco and Iris and that kind of thing. So they're probably going to have a political thriller arc that involves Marco and Iris sort of acting as a guerrilla. Fighter, and then various difficult decisions having to be made because they feel defenseless and they look weak as a result of not being able to do anything with Marco and Iris, and then they will be tempted into war crimes because it's the only thing they feel they can do, and then there's that sort of there's that turmoil about. We're going to have to do something wrong, but we're going to do the lesser wrong thing or the greater wrong thing that's more expedient, all of those kind of things.
What about the what about Cortazar and this Laconia place?
So I think this is going to be maybe
we do know that it's been isolated and mined, so that we know. Well, the verge of teleological things here, but at this point, is that Marco is. Apparently isolated the place.
Yes. I think Cortazar is a little bit like, there's a little bit of a, I feel like a little bit of a Promethean thing. And it's a little bit like he's just plugging in protomolecule bits to other protomolecule bits. Mm-hmm. And it might be because the thing is with Cortazar is that he doesn't seem to have a sense of consequences. So he might very well be, or the whole sort of like the Icarus thing.
His curiosity without fear.
Curiosity without fear. So I will put some substantial cash down on the fact that Cortazar's not making it out of this series.
He's going to fuck himself up somehow.
He's going to fuck himself up somehow. He's going to be curious to kill the cat. But he's probably there's going to be something interesting happening in the process. It's a little bit like the what's the slingshot guy from the belt with the ring? He is basically
Harvey Weinstein. Epstein is Epstein.
Bezipatico? No, Bezipatico is the other one.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant the one who invented the drive.
The Epstein drive.
Yeah.
The Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein drive. I forgot which sex predator it was named.
Yeah, it was different. It was different sex predator.
The Jeffrey drive.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be a belter, so I should be remembering his name, shouldn't I?
he's the hero because
he's Martian. Batiko. Sorry.
No, it's not Batiko. Batiko was the other.
Yeah, you know, the one with the girlfriend.
Yeah.
He was because he kind of was the fuck it and find out guy who eventually fucked it and find out. But I kind of found that to be completely like a really interesting way of telling that particular bit of story.
Yeah, I like that bit. Yeah,
because I was thinking when it happened, it's like if it was dangerous, why did he blow up but his ship didn't? Like that's
which season was that in? Was that in season three?
Season two, the beginning of season three. That was the opening of season three, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was good.
what else is there? Like the Bell stuff. So Marco Inaris, he's the villain. He's gonna get whacked. I think he's probably going.
No, it's partway through. It's Delta V in episode three of season. Episode 7 of season 3.
His
name is Maneo. That's it, Maneo.
Maneo, that's it, yeah. Yeah, because that kind of... That final book is in the last half of that episode. There's two books.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And I love the pace of that. Like, that was... It was almost... What I liked about that was what I don't like about this, was that it felt like they could have done... They could have pushed together the last two series. It would have been great. I'm a bit worried that the Marco and Ara stuff is probably going to be a bit a lot of like what it has been, and he's not going to be the multi-dimensional villain that we kind of hoped him to be. So my hopes are low for Marco. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. But I guess I'm going into this following quarters are the closest.
Yeah.
That's always been the stuff you've been most interested in.
I mean, Laconia is the focus of the everything, really, at this point, because...
Okay, good.
Yeah, but I'm not going to say more than that, because obviously there's a lot of moving parts at the end of this series, you know. Mm.
And I think
we haven't talked about anything outside Expanse much.
No. I think the final season will be a decent season as well. I think it'll be better than the two that we've just watched.
I can't remember.
That poker face of Hamish is giving me doubts.
But if it's a poker face, then surely it should just be like nothing.
No, the fact that it's a poker face, I feel like if it picked up, if season six was good, I'd be like, you'd be like, it's good, Chris, it's good, yeah.
It was a poker face with a hint of doubt to it as well, just a tinge of doubt.
It's like, oh. Maybe, I don't know. But he's good at poker. Hamish is good at poker, so
yeah. Well, I'm not that good, but I'm not rich.
Better than me, I'd imagine. One thing about the episode.
One more thing. Thinking all right, we're no rush. We're doing all right for time.
Because I haven't seen this for a while. So they do a hoity-toity party.
Yeah, there is a very Star Wars-y bit in the middle, or the sort of the start of the last act of the episode is a bit sort of everyone gets together and
this is how we beat Marco with Earth, the people from Earth, and weirdos all working together.
He's wearing an old style shirt collar.
Fashion guru Chris, let's have a look. Well, it's a bit fuzzy, but yeah. Yeah, so it looks like an old sweatshirt.
Yeah, I haven't seen those before. He's wearing a traditional... Isn't that like showing up to a party in with a cruff?
A rough,
sorry.
Yeah, just, yeah.
That's what a cruff is.
Is it a cruff a thing?
I don't know, maybe it is. I don't know.
No.
It's probably one of Chris's sex things that we don't know about, you know.
Cruff is not a word, so we can coin
rough.
It.
Rough.
Rough.
No, it's being a dog.
Yeah. Rough.
Maybe he's the equivalent of that dude Hamish was talking about, who turned up to the club dressed as a Cavalier.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of respect for that guy.
Yeah.
Naomi's wearing her sort of girl Very clothes. Yeah. Well, it's girl clothes, which is unusual for Naomi. what's Amos wearing? Just normal.
He's wearing a t-shirt. That was another thing. It's like, wow, there's a big discrepancy of
I have to say that in as much as I'm not that guy fully, I am that guy when it comes to fashion. You know?
I mean, to be fair, he wore a black t-shirt, which is the most formal colour of t-shirts, right?
Of course, that's what I'm wearing today.
I think you get away with a black t-shirt these days.
You should have like a jacket with it would be...
No. I don't like a jacket with a t-shirt. Jacket with a white t-shirt, I think, or a light colour t-shirt, but jacket. Not
but
like
that's
jacket
pricks that
t-shirt.
Do the wear that, you know, like billionaires and stuff.
We can't hit everything.
Oh, hang on, I've got to re-bring Chris back up.
We got a Bobby there.
Well, Bobby wearing essentially a Star Trek
uniform. Yeah, Star Trek the motion picture. That's the very first thing it made me think of.
It's Star Trek the motion picture crossed with a vampire.
I mean, it just looks like a fleece,
It's very. The collar's up though. She's popped the collar.
Yeah, the collar's up. Yeah,
looks good on her. Like it really suits her.
It's. I don't know. First of all, it's weird that it's blue. Everyone else is wearing black in this universe.
She's going to be worse now. She's like.
That's symbolic. Yeah. And they do actually mention that. You mentioned that color. She says something about the color.
It's like blue suits you. Yeah.
Or something to that effect. She's
like an ex-smoker at this point. Like.
And
Avastrella's
wearing red.
Mm. She's affecting Mars.
I think that's more of her martial colour, not Mars itself, but martial as in stance.
I like they're all dressed in different styles. Kind of Chris just said that, but I like that they're not all just wearing, because I think sci-fi is a bit dumb at times, like in the future everybody wears the exact same fucking clothes. Whereas, you walk out into the street and some people dress like the 70s and some people, there's subcultures, there's all kinds of shit going on.
Yeah. I mean, they all dress the same on the Rossi because you wear bicycles.
Well, that's overalls. Yeah, it's a workplace.
But yeah, no, actually, that's a good
underneath
good point,
that, cause... they're all wearing evening ball gowns. You just don't see that.
Yeah. Avastrella looks like.
Are you going to bring the picture up? You keep talking about it, but you've not brought the picture up. I've got you big for the benefit of the audience.
Okay, I'll.
I've made Chris big. For the benefit of the audience, I've made Chris big.
That's
kind of black and red, really, isn't it?
Well, she's got the pointy collar going on as well, so they're like a team.
They're a team. Well, they are, aren't they? That's it.
Yeah.
Both got the hair up,
Yeah.
The pointy colour team. The trouble is, of course, with Bobby is that she is like 5'11 or something.
Yeah.
All of the scenes, she looks giant because the camera's got to kind of cater to one person's height in the frame.
yeah.
And it's like,
I think that's deliberate. You know, that's one of the things they cast of what Bobby's
like
meant to
height.
Be.
Yeah.
Bobby's meant to be an imposing physical presence, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's got a very imposing physical presence in this still that I've got.
Vague smile on her face. But yeah. And you notice Monica in the background on this. Did you notice her trying to get into the secret meeting thing as well?
Yeah, I like her vibe. I like her vibe of get into places and then blend into the background.
She obviously realised something was good. She was the one that spotted they were all leaving the room sort of thing and tried to follow. And then the military guys kind of just say...
Monica's another character. She's had about four scenes in the entire show and has more personality than Alex.
Yeah, she definitely does.
There's so many characters for whom that's the case.
Yeah, does she become more of a crew on the Rossi?
I hope so. I like her. I want her on, because I don't know what the fuck happens in season 6. I want her on the crew. I want Prax back on the crew. And I want Dr. Lady from season 3. She had potential as well. Season 4, rather.
She has potential. Sorry, I thought you meant the other, the Belter.
Oh, the Belter Dr. Lady. Yeah.
She's cool.
Very, very Belter look.
I want her and Amos to have a fling. I can see that.
Oh, that'd be a laugh.
I thought Amos was. Do you think Amos and Clarissa is more of a brother sister thing? Like, it is?
Oh, definitely. Amos would go for a MILF. He needs mothering. That's why him and Avasarala would be amazing.
Yeah. And also, Avasarala's husband died. Hooray! What's Avasarala's husband's name?
Well, the imposter.
He's not his husband.
So her actual husband might still be alive, as far as
it. Yeah, can she go back to the,
he's a better husband.
That's
one of the weirdest.
The actor that plays the original husband.
That's one of the weirdest things in the show is how, like, they change the actor, which is fine. I think shows should change actors. They shouldn't do what Star Wars does and fucking corpse animate people and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's got out of hand, doesn't
it? Just change the fucking actor. It's fine. We get it. After one scene,
Ridley
we get it.
Not Ridley Scott. Fede Alvarez did it in the new Alien film as well with Ian Holm.
They did it in Roseanne back in the day. One of the daughters, they just changed
the actress.
When she comes in on her first scene, like Roseanne goes, "You look weird," or something like
that.
But no, they changed the actor, which I'm totally cool with, but also completely changed his character, which was...
Also,
the character's personality didn't really fit and wasn't consistent.
In the first couple of seasons, when it's the old actor, he's essentially house husband. He's a supportive house husband who's behind his powerful wife, and he was really good at that. And there was a strength to that. And then it made that relationship make sense. But then.
Just became sort of petulant, really.
Smarmy. A little bit, yeah. Yeah, totally. The character didn't even need to be there.
Mm. No. Just say he's back on Earth with the kids.
Yeah, back on Earth, back on Moon with the kids, whatever. Like, just, like, whatever. On a skiing holiday.
The derpiest looking dog.
Yes, he's just... he's annoying me. He wants out, I think. Are you guys still talking? Yeah. I'll just pop out for a second. I can't just stop it. So hang on, you keep going for a minute.
Okay, all right. another thing. This is an odd thing. Quasar actually looks too normal. It is. You're muted, Drew.
It took me a moment to realise who he was, because he looks so different. Yeah, he looks healthy.
He looks healthy and normal, and this is a normal guy.
Laconia.
Laconia, right? Yeah. So it has the same pointed things, which I've already forgotten whether or not we're supposed to think these are from... They're blue.
I think the only red piece of technology we've seen was the orb itself, the bomb. Because that was a bomb. Right. This is the blue civilization, and the reds put a bomb in it.
Right, okay.
I think. I'm not 100% on that, but I think.
All right, so he wants to protomolecularize these things.
Yeah, to see what it does, or play with it, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty long.
Oh, we've got Chris as well now. It's just me. That's awkward.
Hello.
I was doing a little dance because I didn't want to say.
I've heard a peeing, I've bribed him again.
They do seem to be naming the planets on the other side of the ring through Greek, through regions of ancient Greece. Ilus and Laconia are regions in Greece.
What's that picture? Oh, it's the communication with Laconia.
Laconia.
So we see we've got the alien structures.
Nice. Looks very like Earth. Another one that looks a lot like Earth.
Oddly enough.
Could they not change the colour of the sky or something?
Well, at least it's not a quarry they're in this time. I'll tell you what, can I be slightly spoilery and tell you that Laconia is not a quarry this series coming up.
Well, no.
It's actually got more going on. And there is a bit of, you know, I don't want to spoil it. I'm not going to say details, but you know, it is more alien.
Laconia was just a region in ancient Greece. Ilus was a region in Greek
underworld.
No, it's where Troy was. It's the region where Troy was.
Okay.
Maybe we'll see a horse
or some kind of.
We're going to Laconia though, not Ilus.
Maybe the fuck. Well, that theory's out the window.
There was no Trojan horse.
There was.
The structure.
No. Literal Trojan horse.
You mean the
Rusinante with the protomiracle?
Well, good. See, they're cleverer than we think sometimes. So I'm just knocking everything over.
So yeah, come on, make the grass blue or something for fuck's sake.
Well, I don't think you're going to be disappointed, Chris. Let's put it this way. Oh no, I shouldn't have said that because I'd got you convinced that you were. You're not going to be disappointed by the planet. Let's put it that way. There's other things happening in the series as well, obviously, but. Obviously, you know, we've got all these story threads that they've set up at the end. But you know, we're going to go and look at Laconia because to just do that and then forget about it would be absolute dickery, you know.
Absolute dickery.
So you know that we are going there, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed by it at all.
Good stuff. Good. Because do you notice, Hamish, how normal Cortazar looks? The communication has ended.
He's had his haircut and everything, yeah.
He's had his haircut, he's dressed in normal civvy clothes. And I'm like, was that Cortazar? Were we supposed to know that was Cortazar? Like, I mean, he was talking like Cortazar, like, it could be. And also,
disconnect and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and also because face on, like, he's at a different peculiar.
Yeah, because we're seeing the screen, yeah.
I was just like, ooh, who's this handsome man?
Yeah. This guy looks somewhat handsome. Cortazar looks a bit more like...
Disheveled, normally.
Disheveled, a bit old, you know?
He he's had his hair cut and the beard's gone. Well, he's got that little beard. Presumably, something to do with, you know, the act between jobs and he was doing something else. Or maybe not. Maybe they just chose to clean him up a bit. Who knows?
I think in the previous shows, I think it's partly makeup because he was just like plugged into a computer in a dingy fucking space station.
He's all bashed up and stuff as well.
And he's out there enjoying the fresh air and stuff. Like even though he's got bits of his brain, you know, closed off or whatever. Like presumably he still enjoys a nice walk in the woods or something, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
He's still human.
Yeah.
Justice for Balthazar. Sorry, not Balthazar.
Cortazar.
Cortazar.
Paolo Cortazar.
Yeah. And, he was alright. He looked after his mum, I think, right?
He looked after his mum and was depressed and voluntarily had his brain removed, so he wasn't sad.
Which
I can sympathise with.
He's a good guy.
I'm sort of cheating a wee bit and looking at the rundowns to remind myself what happens per episode. I know the overarching stuff, but I was trying to remember how things start to develop, and it's like, oh yeah.
See, the thing about Cortazar, right, now this is a bit like, to be fair to Cortazar,
One thing I should probably point out, this is possibly better in a way for us, is that there's only 6 episodes in the last series.
Oh, okay. Mm. So we'll do those one by one, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe if we get to episode 3 and we're like,
let's just chunk up the rest. That's fair enough. But yeah,
but yeah, let's try, yeah. try, give it a try.
I mean, to be honest, now I'm here, like Rosie, like I can do. Generally, mornings are going to be better, but like you know, sensible human hours, I can be quite flexible.
Well, if we do it, if we do them, well, this is getting a bit admin-y, isn't it?
Yeah, and also,
we don't talk shit about anything today. Did we,
no, it's been all the expanse. Ghosty's going to be livid.
I know. Yeah. Did we just exhaust? Because we spoke to each other yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, because all I did, that, you know, I took the bins out and I went for a nice walk, saw the ducks. Oh, I went for a nice walk with Carla, friend of the show, Carla.
Hello, Carla.
We had a coffee at the speech house that was all right. Oh, the speech house, which is like a lovely old building that is a hotel, but also they have like a cafe. You can get a nice lunch.
What was it called? Speech house.
Something to do with olden times. Olden times where they did speeches and stuff. I think there was like a WI meeting there or something in the other room. Lovely old building. We just sat in the garden and just had a couple of coffees.
Nice.
And yeah, no, it was nice. And then we saw like the baby chicks are out. Baby ducks are out, sorry.
Ducklings.
And they're like all
ducklings.
They're
fucking cute.
They're all following their mum around. Yeah. And, it was just nice walk around, really. So.
I saw lots of dead wildlife yesterday, if that's any help to you.
Because was that peanuts doing?
No. I was on the way to open mic night, and there was like, obviously all the animals are coming out, and all the little lanes are... things are jumping out and taking people by surprise. The worst one was with dead. There was lots of dead sort of small things like rabbits and badgers and what have you. But the worst one was there was a young deer. That was a bit horrible.
Yeah, the deer jump out. They're kind of. That's what you got to watch out for if you're on country roads. That's why, like with the hazard perception, it's a bit silly because you do have to anticipate stuff like that.
Exactly.
Because the little deers, they just jump out. You know, there could be sheep around the corner.
Or
like,
else you might as well just have a... If you've not done it at that point, nothing's there. You know, there's no... Yeah. Oh, don't get me angry about this thing again.
A friend of mine years ago was hospitalised by a deer running out in front of his car. Like the buck deer. Buck? What do we call them? That's an American term, isn't it? Anyway, the male... The big stags.
Stag?
They're big fucking things. They've got some legs. I assume it was a red deer as well, which are the bigger ones. And just like the front of his car was just caved in, and he was in hospital for a bit.
So if you're in country, you've got to anticipate
wildlife
and shit, especially this time of year. And you know, go maybe 10 miles an hour slower than you usually would do, because it's like
you're going to stop a lot or swerve a lot.
Stopping distance. It's all about stopping distance. Now, the benefit of this time of year is you've got a good traction with the road. Like when it's cold and you got, you know, on the roads, stopping distances are a bit, you know.
But once it gets hot as well, the road starts to get a wee bit soft, and you get less traction as well. So it's kind of a, why don't they make them out of something else? Why does physics have to affect everything?
How about less roads?
What a good idea.
More public transport.
I definitely agree with that.
Roads. Honest to goodness.
Fewer roads, really, I guess.
Yeah.
Monorails. Bring in the monorails.
Have you got a fucking shares in a monorail company or something?
he's
going to come out as a tech
character.
That Simpsons episode has ruined monorails. It's held society back.
What about North Haverbrook?
Why did it put them on the map? No, like, but it has, like, because the thing with monorails is you can put them through relatively, like, quite, like, natural areas with minimal disruption.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we should be doing them instead of roads. They're so much easier to build, they're so much better to build than roads. Roads and concrete and shit is actually quite CO2 intensive as is.
Oh, concrete in particular.
Yeah, but metal poles. Recyclable.
But the point is, it's all part of a bigger problem with capitalism, is that cars are seen as freedom, and oil makes a lot of money. So cars are something that they're going to keep making and keep pushing. Getting them to, you know, get. I think you're right that they are going to go more hybrid and electric, but that's like a pressure they've just had to give into.
Yeah. There was a Mastodon.
Oh, I've been disconnected, haven't I? I've been disconnected. Sorry, viewer. I will try and get back in. I got disconnected that time. We're all getting a go at it today.
Well, yeah. Sorry, I was just saying about this tweet that I read that it was electric cars weren't designed to save the planet; they're designed to save the car industry.
Exactly. Yeah. The way they do it. Yeah, because there's better ways to do it.
Oh, and also because tire dust—that's a fucking killer as well.
Well, we're all whatever percentage plastic now because of tire dust. It is the biggest.
And was it you telling me, Drew, that like tire dust could be one of the more leading causes of Alzheimer's or something like that?
Yeah, I saw speculation in that direction, or somebody's done a paper or something. I don't know whether it's completely.
It's obviously not going to be good for you.
I mean, if part of your brain is made out of plastic instead of what it's supposed to be made out of, it's surely going to have an effect.
That might be a bad thing. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, and there was I saw another great meme, which is boomers, Gen X and millennials all pointing at each other or something like that. And it's like my grandfather be poisoned by lead. My father poisoned by asbestos. Me poisoned by microplastics. It's like,
yeah, but some people made a lot of money in the meantime. That's all that matters.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've got like four people are richer than God. So
I saw a stat this morning. This one isn't funny. It's just in China, 70% of millennials are homeowners, and in rural places, it's 97%.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, but also 50% of the Chinese have got something wrong. What is it? 50% fucking RFK Jr.'s bonkers fucking stats that he makes. I mean, he literally makes up stats, and it's so funny.
Oh my god! Like 50% is that from the Prince Philip School of Asian Studies?
Well, it's not just that. The stats is fucking ridiculous.
I miss Prince Philip.
These people are fucking idiots. I mean, they're not even. You know,
they're good at one thing, and that's making money. Everything else is irrelevant.
But I just don't understand why people fall for somebody like fucking Boris Johnson or Farage the fascist or whatever. You know, it's like these are fucking idiots. They're so transparent. They're not even good liars.
I do know why, and it's because at least they are promising to do something. I think there's just a thirst, a hunger for political action, and if it looks like action. Yeah. When you've got when the whole rest of the political the centre what's left they're proposing more of the same when things are shitty, you'd take any action over more of the same.
Yeah, but surely you'd think that people would see through it when you've already had Johnson and you've already had Truss obviously and you've had Trump already and you get him back again. I mean. Do people just not?
But again, what's the alternative? I mean, the alternative is doing nothing. I mean, and the idea of doing nothing is less palatable than doing something, whatever it is. Mm. And that's dangerous. And that,
But it also seems that the amount of people that like capital's sort of catering towards now is shrinking.
Oh, it's shrinking.
It's like
like
there's like 3,000 people for whom society basically worked for now, right? So anyone below the top 3,000 is basically middle class or below. Like it's it's weird. They've hoarded.
Well, even back in the 70s, I think it was the 70s, under Reagan, I think the top band of income tax in America was. Well, I know when who's the post World War II president?
FDR, you're thinking of, right?
No. Post World War II, who was a
general? Truman?
No, the one who was a general after Truman. Eisenhower?
Eisenhower.
Under Eisenhower, a Republican. I mean, he could have gone either way, but he was a Republican. The top band of income tax was 90%.
Yes, but the thing I've heard from that is that was always designed to be temporary.
I don't know about
in the 60s there was a 90 or 95% tax rate.
Yeah, even in the 70s it was. I mean, now I can't, like 40% or something like that. But the actual, but also you know the loopholes have expanded. So the actual income tax that rich people pay and corporation tax has gone from probably about 70% to about, I think it's like 14% or something like that now.
It's remarkable.
It's transparent, you know.
And also, like,
the selling off of public assets.
We're assuming that 14% is correct, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, the thing is, it's like, we don't really know how rich Putin is, because Putin has acquired a lot of wealth through ways that we would never really know about it. So, for all we know, Putin could be the world's richest man, and it's just like, you just never know. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, well,
which is the smarter way to be rich.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hamish?
Yeah. I mean, how do you measure it anyway? I mean, at the end of the day, dollar value seems to be the main
one. But then that kind of cuts both ways. When people say, like, if these three billionaires gave up 10% of their wealth, you could cure homelessness. No, because their wealth is stocks. It's not money. It's not liquidity. You know,
but you can still tax the fuckers.
Oh, no, you can still take... It is still value that you can take from them, but it's not just as straightforward. It's not that straightforward. The system is fucked, essentially. Like, they don't really have that much money. We just say they do because they behave in a certain way in a certain system. It's all imaginary. We need to allocate things differently.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other things is no, I'm going to say it wrong.
How about we do what's called the super gold standard, right? So it's like, this is almost certainly bullshit. I know this, right? But feel free to break this down, right? So you go back to the gold standard where everything is measured by the gold, except if you are physically in possession of the gold, that is your wealth, right? So you can't borrow or manipulate or anything like that. Wealth is only gold, right? So even if you put it in a bank, then the bank owns your gold. So you got to... Does that in any way...
I think you're describing libertarianism.
But what they do...
The reason why a fiat currency under the control of a central bank is really useful because it allows government to pay for things.
Yeah. Mm.
That's essentially why fiat currency and central banks are good and necessary.
Yeah.
Which is why anarchism is fucking nonsense. No offense, Hamish.
It's not an anarchy symbol, it's art.
I use anarchy, by the way.
Thing I was going to say is that the way that most wealthy people store their wealth is by property.
Well, currently, when the economy was still productive, they would invest in businesses, which was capitalism. Yeah. It's still capitalism, but that's capitalism working correctly. Now capitalism is working incorrectly because there's nothing productive to invest in.
And I guess that's part of the kickback against working from home is because
there's two main reasons that working from home is getting attacked by the right wing media and by politicians and all that, and by, you know, captains of industry, whatever fucking bollocks they call themselves. One reason is the very obvious thing is that if the properties aren't being used, nobody's paying rent for them, they're already getting the value. I mean, they've already got the value of that property and it goes up anyway. But they're
But if everyone works from home, the value will go down.
Yeah, but they're used to make. Well, that's true. Overall, it should do, but it won't, because that's not how economics is working anymore. But the point is that, they're not getting rent from corporations using their buildings and stuff, or even small companies or whatever. But the other thing, the other prong of this is middle management. People that are useless. Are finding out that they're useless.
It's like I don't actually do anything because I'm not contributing in either direction.
Yeah. It's the one tier of jobs where ChatGPT can actually replace. Where ChatGPT,
It's
also, I think, just about control. It's the slippery slope. It's the same as UBI. It's the slippery slope.
That's the same sort of argument as the management people.
Also,
they want their authority. They feel like, you know, you're not doing anything because they're not seeing you do it or hassling you. But, you know, weirdly enough, what happens when people work from home is they do their job, usually in less time because they've got less distractions, and everything's still done, you know?
Yeah, the thing that the bollocks me is that when you've got Keith Starmer and even the European Union now have been talking about this, throwing money at AI because they want to keep up in this some kind of weird arms race.
The bubble's not already burst.
Yeah, but let's
in America already got out of it.
Yeah, there was a thing.
So why are they falling for this?
Well, because the thing is, why EU and UK are falling for this is the worst of all. Because if we assume the best case scenario of AI working, right, which obviously is ridiculous anyway, but if we just assume that AI works as it's promised, its job is designed, the purpose of AI is to replace jobs. So why is Keir Starmer and the EU throwing money into a basically jobs replacement scheme, a scheme that is designed...
them getting taxes.
Yeah.
There's a head poking out of Chris's head, and it's giving me vibes of this. Put it in chat. Uh-huh.
I'll stick it on the screen.
I knew you were going to do that. I knew that was coming. I'm self-conscious. I'm self-conscious now. I'm going to put on a. Oh, Drew. Just a side note. What did you think of yesterday? Did you see yesterday's thumbnail?
Yeah. I was in chat when you made it. I liked it very much. Yeah. The Bovril.
Bovril.
Yeah, yeah, liked it very much. Yeah. It was a good one. It's more. It seems like classic Chris. Classic Chris thumbnail.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'll make Chris big again. There we go.
maybe could have used some more. I don't know. Maybe some more writing. You know.
No, I like it. Some can have more writing, but I think that one works as is. Lovely.
Yeah. It's just like
okay. Obviously not going to get anything going. It doesn't seem we're frustration and anger is sort of paralyzed us a bit. I think lately. You can only be righteously indignant for so many days in a row before you have to have a rest.